You're listening to Community Radio WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for October 1st, 2009.
Last week, while 19 of the world's richest and most influential countries and the European Union met at the G20 meetings in Pittsburgh, a delegation of Mainers traveled down to register their concerns, particularly concerning the impact of free trade policy on destabilizing the global economy. A delegation made up of organizational and union members of the Maine Fair Trade Campaign went to Pittsburgh to participate in the civil society dialogue and in demonstrations, underlining the need for global free trade policies to be re-examined and changed to support employment, environmental, health, food and product safety, and social services globally and in Maine. Two representatives of the Steelworkers Union, Local 1188 from the Verso Paper Mill in Bucksport, and members of the Maine People's Alliance, PICA, Peace Through Inter-American Community Action, and an organizer with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, traveled together. Today we speak with steelworker Stefan Donnell and Maine Fair Trade Campaign organizer Daphne Loring about their experiences in Pittsburgh and their analysis of the economic policies promoted by the G20. We begin with Daphne Loring, an organizer with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign. Welcome to the program, Daphne.
Good to be here.
So let's start off with this delegation that went down with the organization, the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, what this group went down to do.
Yeah, well, one question that we ask at the Maine Fair Trade Campaign is who's making the decisions of our global economy? Who makes the major economic decisions that affect us all, and what are the implications of those decisions, and who wins and who loses? And the G20, the group of 20, which is the European Union and some of the most wealthy and powerful countries in the world, are the ones making the decisions right now for our global economy. And we went down there as Mainers to give a voice to Mainers and to people, and to make sure that our voices were heard in a call for an overhaul of the global economic institutions and structures that have wreaked havoc on so many people around the globe and that we've seen have extraordinary consequences here in Maine. So, in the tradition of resistance and in the tradition of giving voice to our movements, we went down to be in the streets, but also to engage in a dialogue about how we move forward, how we organize, and how we build power.
And can you talk specifically how the G20 promotes some of these neoliberal free trade policies and what kinds of stands they're taking on these sort of policies that they have supported in the past?
Right, and I think we are hearing a shift in rhetoric coming from the G20. I think especially in light of the current economic crisis. But we also see a high level of contradictions in some of the key points that came out of last week's discussions. I think we'll be looking forward to the end of November when the World Trade Organization meets again and seeing how they address the global economic crisis and what the level of commitment among the European Union and these 19 other countries are towards truly reforming how we do trade policy. In general, we're seeing a continuation of a call for liberalizing trade and a continuation of promoting free trade, of deregulation. It's a little complicated. We're seeing simultaneous calls for deregulation and regulation, and I can talk about that later on a little bit. But in general, you know, we've seen here in Maine and our allies around the globe have seen, you know, terrible, terrible consequences of these current free trade agreements, whether they're regional free trade agreements like NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, or bilateral trade agreements between two countries, or whether, you know, institutions like the World Trade Organization. So, so no, you know, the G20 didn't set specific policy of the World Trade Organization. They can't do that, but they do promote further liberalizing trade, and that's a big concern for us.
And one of those points that they're pushing forward, you've said, is to complete the Doha round talks for the WTO, for the World Trade Organization.
Yes, and this is something that is of grave concern for us. We feel these talks are stalled now. We feel there are serious concerns and reasons for why they're stalled, and we think that it's time for a new round of talks, that the Doha round is dead. One of the great ironies that came up this last week during the G20 talks was that there was a definite call for further regulation of the financial sector, and yet there was also a call for the for the completion of the Doha round. Well, interestingly, the Doha round calls for further deregulation of the financial sector, and so that's a direct contradiction. Just one example of a contradiction that we see between what came out of the G20 talks and what we're expecting to see in Geneva in November. And so we just want to be, you know, we want to bring that contradiction to light, and regardless of the rhetoric that comes up at the G20, realize that there are policies that are larger, that are part of existing agreements, that are part of existing institutions, and those policies must change in order for us to truly address the economic crisis that we're facing at a global scale right now.
And there's been widespread criticism of how free trade policies have affected countries globally, but also the United States and Maine in particular. And you also were talking about what Obama had put forth in his campaign as his concerns might be about free trade and how he actually may be delivering on them now. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. During the Democratic presidential primary, Obama made several promises and a commitment to look at trade policy in the U.S., a commitment to make sure that we get strong, enforceable labor and environmental provisions built into existing and new trade agreements. He said that he would review existing trade agreements, he seems to be walking, he and his administration seem to be walking a very fine line in that regard. And so we at MFTC and our allies around the country are calling on Obama to follow through with his campaign promises and his commitment to overhaul U.S. trade policy. He recognized in his campaign that it's been a failure and that the time is now to move forward. I think it's only become more clear with the expanding global economic collapse and the continued rise in unemployment. And I think that we really do need to have real reforms that are going to make a difference for families on the ground and are really going to start helping us rebuild our economies. So we are asking Obama to do that. We think the best way to do that is through supporting the Trade Act, which I can talk about more later. I think that would be a good model and a good blueprint for the president and his administration in moving forward with setting a new fair trade agenda.
Again, we're talking with Daphne Loring with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign. A delegation of Mainers affiliated with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign went down to the G20 meetings in Pittsburgh last week to express their concerns about the impacts of free trade policy on the globe as well as Maine, and what they think that should be done about it. Can you remind listeners in a nutshell, and I know it's a huge, expansive issue, some of these detrimental parts of free trade that people are affected with, and then maybe we can dovetail into the Trade Act, because these are the sorts of issues that the Trade Act hopes to take on, from employment to environment to privatization of social services.
I think, put simply, and this is the most simple way of looking at it, is trade agreements and the WTO have essentially rewritten the rules of the global economy and handed over extraordinary power to multinational corporations and given them free rein and rights that actually exceed the rights of citizens and actually the rights of governments. And we are now seeing the implications of what that means in terms of extraordinary power. So in addition to seeing such impacts as massive outsourcing of jobs, you've seen in Maine more than 30,000 manufacturing jobs leave the state since the passage of NAFTA. That's 4 million nationally. But also more nuanced impacts, like the investment rules that are built into the World Trade Organization and these regional and bilateral trade agreements provide multinational corporations with the ability to sue a federal government for lost investment. So they could sue a federal government if a policy that is in place by that federal government or by a state government or a local municipal government, if that policy they see is infringing upon their profits, they can sue either for losses or to have that that policy be changed. And that's a huge kind of unprecedented way of looking at the economy, but also ends up being an affront to democracy. And that's one of our biggest issues with the existing trade model, which we think needs to be one of the first things that gets taken out of the World Trade Organization, gets taken out of future trade agreements.
I was just going to bring up the example right now of, under the Central American Free Trade Agreement, the Canadian mining company Pacific Rim Mining, under the auspices of a subsidiary they set up in Nevada, is suing the country, the government of El Salvador, for now blocking them from continuing with gold mining there. So that's under the Central American Free Trade Agreement, exactly using those terms that you just explained.
And what's extraordinary about that is that's the Central American Free Trade Agreement between the United States and Central American countries and the Dominican Republic, and we're talking about a Canadian mining company. And so this also reveals the easy ability of foreign corporations to set up subsidiaries in countries that are within these trading agreements, and then to use those subsidiaries as the legal mechanism to challenging policies. And that's an issue that we have with all these trade agreements, but we're particularly concerned about with the pending Panama Free Trade Agreement, because Panama is one of the easiest countries in the world to set a subsidiary up in. And so that trade agreement is hopefully will never pass and will never get voted on, but it has been negotiated. It was sent to Congress by Bush, and MFTC is also telling Congress and the president that we do not want to see that passed, but at any point it could come before Congress, or Congress could choose to take it up. And at that point, we'll be asking all of your listeners to put calls into the delegation and please urge for a rejection of that trade agreement.
In looking forward, let's talk about the Trade Act sponsored by Representative Mike Michoud of Maine, and looking at the Panama Free Trade Agreement and the proposed Colombia Free Trade Agreement, what that act would require of proposed agreements and free trade agreements that are already in operation.
And that's the exciting thing about the Trade Act, is it really provides an overall blueprint, not only for future trade agreements, but also calls for a review of existing trade agreements and then reform of in existing trade agreements based on the standards that are laid out in the Trade Act. So basically, if the Trade Act were passed, there would be an overall review of the major trade agreements that were in, and then there would be renegotiation based on the results of that review, and then all future trade agreements must adhere to the guidelines that are set forward in the Trade Act that lay out what must and must not be in future trade agreements. So some of the biggest things that we talk about in terms of these extraordinary investment rules, those would be immediately pulled out of all trade agreements. There's no reason that in negotiating and passing trade agreements for goods and services that we need to be granting excessive rights to multinational corporations. We can have sound trade policy in moving forward in our global economy without those extraordinary investment rules. But it would also reform agricultural provisions. It would reform food and product safety provisions. It would eliminate bans on procurement. Right now there are bans that ban Buy American, sweat-free, recycled paper procurement policies that might exist. There are also, just food and product safety environmental provisions. So we have more information on our website, which is www.mainfairtrade.org, and we have a wonderful kind of two-pager that goes over kind of the detail. Does a good kind of review of what's kind of what's in the piece of legislation, and I encourage anybody who's interested to check that out.
In the last part of our interview, Daphne Loring with Maine Fair Trade Campaign, can you talk a little bit more about where the Trade Act is, what sort of support it has from Maine's delegation, and then also talk about a new piece of legislation that was passed in the Maine legislature calling for a study on how free trade agreements impact water extraction in Maine?
Yeah. Well, it's really exciting. As you said, Congressman Michaud put this piece of legislation forward, and there are now 120 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. So this shows, not only extraordinary support for the Trade Act, but really that there is just huge concern over the direction the existing model of free trade, and there's just increasing understanding that this is not good for our country. This is not good for our workers. This is not good for our environment. And I think a lot of people are also concerned about the implications on people abroad. And so the fact that it has garnered so much support within Congress, I think, sends a significant message to the president and to the folks setting future policy, that this is the time for an overhaul and to really redo how we think about trade and how we set trade policy, and also to go back and review existing policy and really make those reforms as soon as possible.
Great, and now
in terms of the Maine delegation. In addition to Michaud being the original sponsor in the House of Representatives, Representative Pingree is also a co-sponsor, and we are hoping to get our full delegation on board with getting Senator Snow and Collins to co-sponsor as well. The Trade Act of 2009 has not yet been introduced in the Senate, and we are urging Senator Snow to sign on with Senator Sherrod Brown, who's the original co-sponsor in the Senate, have it be a bipartisan bill. And she's been fairly good on trade policy in the past. She considers herself a fair trade senator from Maine, and she's very interested in being an original co-sponsor of the Trade Act, and so I couldn't stress enough that we would like to have the senator be signed on as an original co-sponsor and encourage people to reach out to the senator and ask her to be an original co-sponsor of the Trade Act.
And quickly, in talking about the Maine legislature's passage of a study to look how free trade impacts water extraction in Maine.
Yes, you know, as many people know, there's been a lot of discussion about groundwater extraction in the state of Maine, and there is concern about the implications of free trade agreements on our ability to manage our groundwater and to manage groundwater extraction. And therefore, the legislature has called for a study that looks into how existing trade agreements might affect our ability as a state and our ability for municipalities within the state of Maine to manage groundwater extraction. And so that study is underway, and there is a public hearing 2 weeks from today in Augusta. That's October 15th at 6:30. It will be taking place in the Appropriations Committee room, and we encourage Mainers to come out and speak out, and we are encouraging people we're asking people to stand up and say that kind of the right to govern our groundwater should exist within our communities and should exist within the state of Maine and should not be affected by these trade agreements, that multinational corporations should not have the ability to interfere with our ability to manage our groundwater.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Daphne Loring, an organizer with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign.
Thank you.
And we are speaking now by phone to Stephen Donnell. He's the president of the Steelworkers Union Local 1188 at the Verso Paper Mill in Bucksport, Maine. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you.
So you were on the delegation to the G20 as well. Why did you go along, and what were your impressions?
I really wanted to go along because I thought it was important that we keep the message of fair trade out there prominently as President Obama decides what path forward he's going to do around trade.
And just in a nutshell, what do you think are the most important impacts? How are the two related for people who may be unfamiliar with the issue?
Well, the G20 is basically about global economy, and I think it's pretty hard to talk about global economy without thinking about the concepts of how international trade happens. And in the past, international trade has been based more on free trade. And I am much more interested in a platform of fair trade where things like human rights and labor rights and environmental factors within the other countries that trade with us should be factored in.
As a union member, I'm sure you're familiar with the job losses in Maine over the years.
Yes.
So the impact of the so-called free trade agreements has been pretty extensive here.
It's really been heartbreaking to watch the devastation of a lot of my friends within the paper industry, in particular here in Maine. I've watched whole facilities close up and partial closures, and people no longer working in the paper industry. And in my mind, at least, it's pretty well directed to how trade has been allowed to go on as free trade up to this point, starting with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Is this the first time that you've attended one of these big protests?
It certainly is. It's the first time I've ever been to a G20, and it's certainly the first time I've ever been to a protest of that size.
Reports that we were getting were that there was a police riot. The police were pretty out of control with violence. Did you see any of that, or what were your impressions?
I've never seen a police environment like that, that's for sure. And I mean, I understand the need to protect the 20 leaders that were out there in Pittsburgh. But to the extent of the police that were out there, I've never seen anything close to that. I didn't even feel like we were in our own country, to tell you the truth. I did not see any police violence. They were pretty strong in their actions, but I didn't actually witness any of the police violence. We stayed, the main contingent that was out there kind of stayed in the background, even though we participated in stuff. We had a message we wanted to put out, but we really didn't want it to be done in a disobedient way.
So you say there was a strong police presence. Other than numbers, were there any attempts to prevent you from getting your word across or from joining in on the protests?
Well, the second day that we were out there, which was just prior to the G20, I think it was on Wednesday. There was a rather large demonstration. I would guess of 500 to 1,000 people, and they basically, the police wanted to contain us to a park and not let us leave as a group. So there was a little bit of a struggle there, and ended up demonstrating out in the streets. And then the police virtually closed down the last street that we were all on, and ordered everyone to break up. And I believe that is at the point where some of the folks that were at the front of that demonstration and the police did clash.
Was that the park where they circled people in and then were using the sound?
Yes, it
weapons?
Is.
So did you hear some of that?
Yeah, certainly the really loud sounds to break up the crowd, and them playing repeatedly over the loudspeakers that it was an unlawful demonstration deemed by Pittsburgh and that we needed to break up.
So clearly meant to intimidate people, and reportedly the first time that those, I don't know exactly what those sound weapons are called, but those loud, specifically meant to drive people away, the sounds that were being played by law enforcement, that was a new thing. And so with all of that, and this being the first time that you've attended one of these, do you think you'll go back? Do you come away from it inspired? Do you encourage other people involved in unions and in organizing workers to attend these things?
I think when there's a solid message, we didn't go out there in protest of the G20 or in protest of President Obama. We went out there to keep fair trade in the front of everyone's mind, and hopefully in front of President Obama's mind as well. And I think that to do something like that is a right within this country that we should be able to take as citizens. And I think we did that, and I certainly would do it again. Again, no planned disobedience, not trying to clash with the police, but I think we have a right to our thoughts and to air our thoughts.
All right. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to leave our listeners with regarding the G20 or the organizing that you're all doing up here in Maine?
Nothing specifically to the G20 or the organizing. I guess I would like anybody and everybody to become familiar with the Trade Act that's out there, that's sponsored by our representative, Michoud, and that lays out an awful lot of the basis for potential fair trade. And I think if people really got familiar with that, they'd understand the difference between fair trade and free trade and how that really could help our country, and specifically Maine in manufacturing.
And the website for more information is Maine Fair Trade Campaign?
Oh, I don't have that right in front of me.
Okay, we'll get that and add that on. I believe that it's mainfairtrade.org, but we'll check.
I think
sure.
That it is, too.
Okay, we'll put it up on our website for listeners.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
That's Stephen Donnell. He is the president of the Steelworkers Union Local 1188 at the Verso Paper Mill in Bucksport, and he attended the G20 protests that took place recently. And that's Radioactive for today. Radioactive is a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal produced by Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can catch us every Thursday at 4. If you'd like to contact us by email, please send it to news@weru.org. Stay tuned for Hightower coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and as always, a night of great music here on your community radio station, WERU.